Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Season 6, Episode 131. Let's start another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Coller, Nolan Hames, and Sander Johnson.
Once upon a time, finding a book on presentation design was almost non-existent. We can fast forward to present day and the offerings of books in the presentation design, presentation skills, presentation software, technical how-tos, all those combined, they're still pretty sparse, but there is more and the quality of the content overall is really, really good. One of the newest books available is called Everyday Business Storytelling, and we get to spend some time talking with one of the co-authors today.
Janine, welcome to the Presentation Podcast. It's not hard to get me to buy a book on presentation or visual storytelling. If I see one come across the screen, I'm going to buy it. It's what I did a few months ago when I came across your recently published book, Everyday Business Storytelling. Now, I got to say, I generally don't expect much from books by authors I'm not familiar with, and I wasn't previously familiar with you. But when I sat down to read it, I just kept remarking and taking notes on how good and clear and really excellent it was. And I had to ask myself, why don't I know these authors? So I mentioned it to Troy and Sandy and they said, Janine and Lee, we know them. So I was the odd man out, but let's start by introducing yourself, the presentation company, and just some of your background. And as we always say, nobody gets to the world of presentation kind of intentionally. Everyone falls into it. Everyone has their own origin story. So what's yours?
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. So yeah, I am one of the co-authors. The other co-author is my sister and real life business partner. So this book is 20 years in the making. We've had a business together for 20 years. We started this company in 2001. And Lee and I, she's my business partner, my real life sister, also my best friend. And together we created this training company where we provide storytelling training to some of the world's biggest brands like Nestle and Facebook and HP and Medtronic, and the list goes on. And so we have all these enterprise customers that have really stuck with us and partnered with us over the years. And they've been begging us for years to bottle up our secret sauce. And so that is what this book is. Everyday Business Storytelling. I think of it as our greatest hits from the last 20 years of how to incorporate something as simple as storytelling into our everyday business communications and conversations. And now it's available to everyone.
And then geographically, because we're very much all over. I mean, I'm in Southern California. If you don't know, Sandy's in the Midwest and Nolan is in the New York area. Where are you geographically located?
Our primary headquarters is in Portland, Oregon, on the West Coast, but we have team members everywhere. We are geographically dispersed and there's a lot of work from everywhere, anywhere. That is us, but home is Portland, Oregon.
And did you start there? I don't think so, did you?
Well, originally Lee and I are from the Bay Area. So we grew up in California and very, very early on, I mean, technically, I think I started the company in California and then somehow migrated north to Portland and I haven't looked back since.
Janine, do you consider yourselves presentation designers, writers, consultants, storytellers, all the
stories, above? Yeah, a little bit of everything, but I would say mostly storytelling communicators, trainers. So our company, our products are workshops. We deliver on-site, virtual, and on-demand workshops that are really centered around storytelling a business. We also have sort of, I would say, an extension from there moves into visual storytelling, like how do you bring your story to life visually? And then there's a whole track around data visualization because we're all living and breathing in data. So how do we tell our stories with data when a lot of us are not data experts, visualizing of data? And then we have also a piece around virtual meetings because we were early adopters back in 2004 of virtual training, virtual meetings. And now, of course, that's evolving into hybrid meetings because that's becoming our new normal. So I would say storytelling at the core, training is really our kind of how we empower really everyone at large companies, small companies, how to communicate better using storytelling.
So 2 years ago, was most of your training in person or remote? I know what it was last year, but what?
It was a mix. Yeah. So I'm really grateful. So one of the things that I love about working with my sister is she in particular is very innovative. She always loves to listen to our customers and to hear what is tracking, what are clients wanting. And I think because we started small back in 2001, we were small, we were nimble, we were able to flex. And so at the time, now I'm kind of going around 2003, 2004, you had the likes of Microsoft. And at the time they had Microsoft Live Meeting and they were looking for experts to make their product look good. So we got an opportunity early on to deliver webinars in Live Meeting to really big audiences. It was like a speaking event series. And we just kind of leaned into it. We didn't really know a whole lot about virtual meetings or virtual training. At the time, all of our workshops were delivered in person, but we were kind of dabbling over on the side and thinking, what is this virtual world? WebEx at the time had not been purchased by Cisco, but we were with them when they were. And then we ended up coming in and training Cisco sales team on how to conduct conversations, meetings virtually. Apple brought us in to train their channel sales partners on how to sell virtually. So we, that innovation bug, I think that entrepreneurial spirit has been with us forever. And thank God, because we got through the recession in 2008. And when the pandemic hit, I'm not going to say we didn't all stop in our tracks and say, oh my gosh, what is happening? But what really happened is all of our on-site business just shifted into virtual, where it might have been more of a 50-50 split. It became 100% virtual. And now we're really thinking about, well, what is the future of training? What is it going to look like? Is it going to be hybrid? Is that realistic? How do we pull that off? So just constantly trying to stay innovative and listen to our customers because, man, when you sit back and relax, and in our industry, it's like you become obsolete, you become irrelevant, and we don't want that. So that's our story.
Well, so during, I'm just curious, during all of this, when did you say, we've got to get a book out there? I mean, just listening to your story, your origin story, and how you grew with these amazing companies, when did you say, it's time to get a book out there?
You know, the truth is about the book, it was more of a bucket list for Lee and I think we went into it with eyes wide open. So everything we have heard and talked to other authors, it is not a revenue generating product. We never looked at it as, oh, this is going to be our big, you know, big win. We looked at it as brand building. We looked at it as a way to help reinforce our training that we're already delivering. But it was kind of one of those, like, we'll put it out there. It's a bucket list. And you know, couple that with our customers begging for it, asking for it, when are you going to write your book? And then, you know, the stars kind of aligned. We were approached by Wiley. This was now 2 years ago. They were following us on the speaking circuit. I speak a lot at different conferences. And they said, we like what you're doing. And we want to know if you'll write a book. And so I kid you not, I think it took us 8 months to like figure out the contracting and the negotiation because we were not willing to just give up our IP. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing about it. It wasn't like this, like it was a bucket list. It was like, sure, we'll make it happen one day. But so we were not just willing to sell our souls. This is our 20 years of IP and we were not about to just have it go out the window. So I was actually still shocked that it took us that long. And even our publisher said, wow, you've got a really good lawyer because we were scrutinous and we really cared deeply about the integrity of our content and how it was going to come to life in a book. So fast forward, the actual writing of the book, shockingly, was easier than I thought because it's content we had. But what we needed to do is shape it in a way that is digestible in a book format. I wanted it to be very visual. I wanted it to be very scannable. I never assumed that anyone has time to sit down, read page for page. And I wanted it to be that thing that you grab when you're like, okay, I've got to put together a QBR, a quarterly business review. Where do I begin? And just go to that chapter on when I have to do an update. Well, how do you tell stories when you're just giving a boring update on a program or a product? So it was really designed to be a grab and go. Or it can be sit down and read in one full seating. But I wanted it to resonate with customers that we are serving who are busy in an always on world and just make it accessible and approachable.
Well, with that, who is the book written for? Presenters, the admins creating the presentations for their boss, presentation designers, people in the audience critiquing presenters. Who would you say the audience is? Because this is great.
Yeah, it's anyone who wants to get good at storytelling in their everyday business conversations, communications, but they don't know where to begin. And I would say, Troy, everyone you just listed would be great beneficiaries of this book, because there's actually a chapter at the end where we talk about creating a culture of storytelling, and it's about creating a common language and a vocabulary. So yes, it's for folks that are building the stories and crafting the narratives. It is also for those that are tasked with building out the visuals. Maybe that person is the same. And so we're finding that when people talk story, they talk the same language, it really speeds up the process, right? Because now we're not just focused on one element, which often is the visuals, because that's the pretty. That's what people like to talk about. But now we can have conversations around the actual content, the big idea, the conflict of the story. And, you know, we'll talk about those elements of storytelling. So we're seeing, and we see this in our workshops too. There's the senior folks that have a team or a staff under them that helps them build their stories and presentations. And then there's everybody else that has to do it themselves. And so it's for everyone. It really is everyday business conversations for anyone that wants to get good at it. Because it's not a skill that I think we're all good at naturally. We have to practice it.
Well, it's not even a skill that most people understand or could define. And so let's talk about the heart of the book, which is not an endless meditation on Joseph Campbell and who's the protagonist and dramatic structure and all that. Because honestly, I always tell people, I actually have a degree in media writing. I was a theater director and writer for years. So I've read all those books, and they don't work. They don't work in the business world. They don't work in the context of putting a presentation. This is a practical framework. It's a three-part framework. So when we're talking about storytelling, it's not that big dramatic structure. It's a simple three-part framework of, number one, a setting, which you call the four signposts. Number two, the big idea, which is, yeah, that's what that is. And then number three, the why, what, and how. So we can go into each part of the framework, but it's good to know that, again, unlike a lot of presentation and business books, you break down how the structure can manifest itself in slide decks on a slide-by-slide basis. And you do it over and over with multiple examples, which I really like. I mean, there's just nothing worse about, you know, than reading a book and, you know, getting the philosophy and the theory, and then there's no example. So like, how does this work in a slide deck? So it's practical, it's actionable. Just tell us a bit about how that was initially developed, that sort of that three-part framework.
Yeah. So, I mean, for us and everything you just said, it's like music to my ears, because that is truly how we approach our training. It's how we approached our book. Storytelling for a lot of us in business, it feels fluffy. I mean, I think we wrote a chapter. It's called "We're Going to Unfluff the Reputation of Business Storytelling," because for a lot of us, there's resistance, right? There's this feeling of, I'm not from Hollywood. I'm not writing a script. I'm doing everyday stuff, the non-sexy, as I like to say. And so what we've discovered is people are craving knowing how to use storytelling, but they don't know where to start. So our whole mission, whether we're showing up and delivering a training, or you're attending a self-paced class, or you're opening our book, it's how does everyone do this practically and repeatedly? Like, this can't be a one-time thing, right? This has to be something that becomes part of my, as I said earlier, vocabulary, my culture among my teammates, so that we're all talking the same language. And the interesting thing is, we all tell stories every day in our personal lives. If you have kids or you have friends, and just listen to how people talk to each other, we talk in story, right? You won't believe this, what happened last week. Well, there's the setting, right? I'm about to start and tell you about the setting. Oh, but you can't, then she said this, you know, and there's some conflict and there's characters. So we do it naturally in our personal lives. And yet we get to work and we say, let me close that box and let me open up PowerPoint or Keynote or slides from Google, you know, and we kind of compartmentalize. And I think that's where we're all getting into trouble, because we're data dumping and there's no connection. There's no sort of trust that's getting built in our conversations and communication. So we were really adamant about making this practical, and that's what we've been doing for 20 years. So very, very simply, we call it the why, what, how of storytelling, because I don't want people to overthink this. Every story has a why, and that's made up of three things: your setting, characters, and conflict. Ultimately, we're trying to get to the how, right? Which is the resolution of our story, where we get to talk about ourselves and our products and our solutions and how great we are. But before we can jump to that resolution, we believe you need that what, the big idea, that one thing. And that big idea really serves as what we call a mental bridge, in a way, that gets us out of conflict, which can make your audience uncomfortable, to the resolution. But they're not quite in the resolution, which is usually the details and the bulkier part of the story. So the why, what, how is really this fundamental, repeatable, practical framework, and it can be applied to any type of communication, business or otherwise. I do use it on my kids. And the idea is that, yes, it works with presentations. Yes, there's many times where I sit down and I open a deck and I go, do I have a big idea? You know, or did I jump to the resolution too soon? Or is my conflict clear enough, or is it buried? So yes, you can almost kind of self-test yourself in working through decks, working through presentations. It works great on emails. It works great when I have to write scripts for videos. I mean, we're all doing so many more videos these days. We'll write scripts and we use this framework, because if I just jump to a video and it starts with, let me tell you all about my product, nobody cares. And so that why, what, how is really a grounding force that really anchors every conversation and communication that gets built.
I always get itchy and really cranky when I see the word character in sort of the business world and the storytelling, because again, I've just seen the whole thing, like, it should be the plot of Star Wars, and you know, what's the you know, who's the protagonist and what's the rising action, and it just, when you, so those first few things, the setting, the characters, and the conflict, the best part of the book for me was you explaining that can be one slide. That and probably should be one slide, where it's literally, you're the customer, that's the character who is, you know, needs to increase revenue 20%, that's the conflict, and the setting is, you know, you have increased competition and blah, 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 and that's the setting, and there you go, that's it. Now we're into the deck. So it's not this, as you said before, it's like, you don't have to overthink this stuff. It's like, who's the character? Is it the mythical customer? No, it's just the client, the person who's reading the deck, that's it. And then you move on. What's the conflict? It's just the fact they want to make more sales. I mean, that it's as simple as that. And I think that to me was one of the big attractions.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Nolan, because you're representing exactly who we serve, whether it's in a workshop or really this book. It's that resistance, right? Because the minute you do hear characters, you think, forget it. I'm not doing this. It really is. It's so obvious. And I can see it when I walk in a room too, or in a virtual room. I can tell who are my naysayers, who are my resistors. And they're usually the ones that are sold and won over at the end. It's because we are trying to take something as simple as a storytelling concept, like, yes, characters are an essential ingredient to great stories, but how do they show up in our business world? And that's where, through examples, through showing example after example, finally people are like, okay, I get it. I see how you're making this attainable. And that's really our goal. Otherwise, nobody uses this stuff, right? When it's too theoretical and almost mystical and magical, it feels like, well, that's for people that know how to do it, you know, and we sort of opt out. So yeah, we talk a lot about how to introduce characters in business narratives, whether that be a named character, which is very creative, you know, meet Joe, meet Alex, or maybe you put yourself in the story, you are the character, and you share a personal story. Or most of the time, what we see is unnamed characters. And you'll see a lot of the examples in our book are of those of unnamed characters, you know, and it's consumers or millennials or our team, you know, it's broad groups of people that still represent characters, but we may not get to know them intimately on a personal level at the name level. But just giving people options, I think, is what feels freeing about this process, that they have choices and they can play and they can sort of iterate as they go and see what sticks based on their audience.
And of course, you know, any successful story or presentation can be fit into a lot of different frameworks, but it works here. So again, I think there's, you know, of course, some of that reverse engineering going on, but as I said, it works. And you reverse engineer something, does it fit in? Oh, I'm missing something. That's right. Why it's not working. And then you put that in and then move forward with it. As we said, there are lots of examples. They're actually not, which I also appreciated, you chose not to do what often happens, which is use famous examples of speeches, or this is Julius Caesar's speech, and don't you see how the character, no, you're giving some, you know, prosaic, you know, everyday business, you know, case studies. I don't know if those were, you know, real, if those were real case studies.
Yeah, so that was the hardest part about writing this book, truly, what you're tapping into. It's, there are several stories that show up and they are all fictitious. Except one. There's one that we quote. It's actually from a company called Sleep. They do sleep training. And I worked with the CEO at a time a couple years ago at Facebook. And so I said, can I have permission to show your story? She said, with pleasure. But every other story is fake. Fake but real. And the reason is, and we do this in our trainings too, we want the examples to be approachable. We want people to be looking at them and say, oh my God, did you steal my slides? Did you like take over my inbox? Like, this is my stuff. This is my world. And that was by design. And so the time consumption to build those stories and the realness behind them, the backstories behind them, the challenges that they faced and the stories they're telling, the audiences that they're speaking to, that was the real energy. And we have a whole team of storytellers and data storytellers that's their job, is to dream up the next story based on reality. I mean, the data in all of our fake stories is based on reality. And, but everything else has changed to protect the innocent, as we like to say, because, you know, we work with some really big brands and we can't just go and start showing their content all over the place. And so I'm so glad those stories resonated, Nolan, because those are like my babies, you know, and to see those come alive and to have them resonate and for you to react the way you are, that was always my intention. Our intention with the book is that these examples show up and they are real, they're relevant, they're approachable, and that you can see yourself in them and then ultimately do something about it and say, wait, I see what's not working. I can make mine better. Just having inspiration here of what not to do.
Exactly. Just listening to you talk back and forth, there are two big things that I loved about the book. One, the first, as you and Nolan have been talking about, is how practical the information you've delivered is. And I mean that in a very positive way. Anyone who takes a look at this book can take the steps, emulate them, and recreate an awesome story. So it's just kudos to you. It's beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You guys, you're making my job easy here. Are you going to ask me hard questions? Because I feel like I'm like, oh my God, thank you, thank you, thank you. Like I'm having a big love fest here. Thank you.
But I love how beautiful the book is. That I have to say that it's a gorgeous designed book with wonderful examples of slides throughout. And I'd say it's worth the price if someone were just reference the before and after slides and the notes of each. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the design of the book and the presentation examples.
Yeah. So I've got to give a huge shout out to Julie Terberg at Terberg Design, because she is the mastermind behind the transformations of the before and after stories. I mean, she has worked with TPC, our company, the presentation company, for I think over 12, 13, maybe 15 years now. So I've got to give her a shout out for just the beautiful transformations that really come to life in all of the story examples. So anytime you see a case study story in the book and they're scattered throughout, that is Julie. And I have to give her a shout out because we love her so much. Now, the design of the book, we actually worked with a book designer that we ended up hiring. It was a cost to us because it was so important to us that the look is just right. I did not want this book to feel like a bunch of PowerPoint slides slapped on a page, right? I wanted it to feel like a journey that we go on together. And even just down to, I wanted a lot of headlines that you can scan and sort of, you know, flip through pages and go, oh yeah. Or like oversized quotations and big statements that anchor or help you transition from one section or one chapter to the next. I mean, all of this is what we do when we communicate and present, but I wanted it to show up in the book. So we had a designer who also is amazing. Her name is Becky Nelson. And, you know, we kind of co-collaborated, and a lot of our content was living and is living in the format of instructor slides, right? Because that's our product. We show up and we deliver workshops. So we're just a very highly visual company. Everything we do is very, very visual. And so it sort of made no sense to have a book that wasn't. And in fact, when Wiley came to us, we said to them, you know, our book's going to have to be very visual. And they were like, uh-huh. In fact, we're letting you have carte blanche on all the editorial, all the visual. Like, they didn't want to give us a designer. I think they were like, we don't want to get in your way. I think you know what you're doing here. So I'm so glad that we had just complete creative license on the look and feel and no limitations on color or like, and I also really fought hard for the size of the book. I didn't want something too big because I didn't want you to feel like, oh, it's this heavy Bible that you got to travel with. But equally, I didn't want it so small that it's like gets lost, right? It's almost like it's an 8x8. It's a square. And I wanted it to be something you'd sit on the side of your desk or on a coffee table and or you could throw in your bag because it's not, you know, it's not a heavy load. But yes, thank you for noticing the visuals. It was absolutely a labor of love and a lot of rounds of edits. And yes, you're taking me back to the late nights and weekends of proofing and editing and art directing and just really hoping that our vision came to life. So it's it was so a team good. Sport. It was not me alone. But thank you.
All right. So the focus of the book is implementing story structure into slide decks, but you do devote a couple chapters to some other things. I got to tell you, one of my favorite ones was writing emails. Whole chapter on that. And I love because we all obviously read emails all the time that are just a mess and require us to sort through every line. I actually spend a lot of time visually, sometimes depending on the email, of course, you know, visually designing with a bullet point, with a highlight, with this in emails. And I feel like it's I'm not even going to say it's a lost art. It was an art that never existed, I think. So can you give a few words of wisdom just on crafting a good email?
Yeah. So, I mean, our philosophy around emails and storytelling is this isn't for every email because you're going to go crazy if you apply every single email that you ever write. But I think those high stakes emails that really need a response that are going to be a make or break in moving business forward, that's where I'd say put some energy into this. And again, going back to, do you have a clear why, what, and how? Because that framework applies regardless of modality. And I challenge everyone, I mean, go back to your inbox and check out either the last email you sent or most likely the spam email that you get. Cause I don't know about you, I get so many spam messages and they always start with the resolution. They go right into what they can do for me. And I'm like, why should I care? There's no why, there's no what, no big idea in the subject line. And the how is just screaming out at me and delete. I don't take notice. I mean, there's a whole before and after series I could do just from my inbox alone from the terrible emails I receive. But, you know, over the years, working with these really big brands like Apple and Facebook and Microsoft and Cisco, you know, you kind of get put in the hot seat with very senior leaders very fast. And we really had to learn very quickly in our early days how to break through, how to be heard. And email is one of those forms that we're using. And so we started to notice as well, wow, how did I get so-and-so to respond so quickly and sign off? Or I haven't heard from so-and-so in a long time, my gosh. And then you go back and you look under the hood. So this idea of having a why, what, and how, I think the tips I will say is, put your big idea in the subject line because that's the first place everyone looks. That's what your readers are scanning to decide if they want to click to move on. And, you know, the subject line, this I think, you know, there's this a little bit of a conflict between how brief it should be and you know, how much is too much, but just enough. I think the more contextual you can make it so that the reader is like, okay, I have enough to know I want to click and take action. And sometimes that means more words. So this isn't a competition for brevity. It's a competition for putting your big idea in the subject line to make it easy on your audience so that they know what they need to know or do. And that's what I think a lot of us fail at. I mean, a lot of subject lines are meeting preparation or update or follow up. I mean, how many of us get those, right? And you're like, I don't know which meeting you're talking about.
No, or you get the reply to another email with a whole new subject. Like, that yeah. had nothing to do with it. That's my big pet peeve. Right. The email category in this book was really awesome. I mean, it caught me off guard. It's like, wait, why did we just transition to emails? Because first of all, email and communication is a big pet peeve of mine in that it's just not done well. And it's really good. And it literally, I almost skipped the section. I kind of flipped the page. There's a big red box and it says, what's not working? No context established, X not there. Vague subject line, X not there. Resolution ask is unclear. X, wait, hold on. I'm going to back up and read this. This because that's every email I get. And for people that were just listen to Janine talk about it, these are not 3-page long emails. Their examples are 3 paragraphs. And I just love how it suddenly tied back. You have to go a few pages into the email section to suddenly realize, oh, big idea is there. Setting and characters are there. Conflict is there. Big idea is there. I mean, literally the whole storytelling framework is done in a very compact email. I thought it was very good. I really liked it.
Thank you. And again, just trying to show examples because a lot of us, I think conceptually can think, oh, sure, I could apply this storytelling approach to email, but then you go, well, how do I do it? So I'm just such a believer in showing, not telling. And who doesn't love a good before and after?
Yeah. We all love the that. Before and afters were good there as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
I did take a second. I was like, wait, why do these belong here? And then I kind of went back to the title, Everyday Business Storytelling. It's not Everyday Presentations.
Yes.
It's everything communications. Like, oh, this, and there's a few other topics in there as well that kind of will let the people grab the book and find them for themselves. But it's just not all slides. It is a storytelling framework and it works really well. Okay. So I have a question. So you published and I assume finished writing this book during the pandemic because it just came out. I mean, you just told us it was this really, really long time period.
Yeah.
I that's not the important part. When, so now remote presenting is everything and you have a small little blip about it. Now, yeah. I got to work with the presentation company many, many years ago before people even considered remote trainings and presentations as a thing. And you did. I mean, you definitely adopted it. Are there differences from your perspective, things that people should do differently with regard to story when they're presenting on Zoom or, you know, their remote meeting platform for their presentation than when they're in person or doing a stage presentation with, you know, different AV support?
Yeah. So this was a passionate chapter for me. I believe it's chapter 19. It's called When Your Audience is Virtual. Mm-hmm. And yes, because storytelling is not a one size fits all. And your audience is going to impact how you're going to flex and adapt it. And there's a whole section in the book called How Do I Flex My Story based on all these different, you know, modalities or audience needs. Because I think, again, that is our reality. It is not just show up and deliver your story. So I think with virtual and now as we think about the future with hybrid meetings, right? That is going to become our new norm, especially for those of us that are going back to an office and then some are still staying virtual. How do you now tell your story when your audience is virtual 100% or virtual and a little bit in person and we have this mix? For us, it's all about starting with a good story structure, right? So if you've used that why, what, how, you're already ahead of the game, right? Because you're giving your audience a reason to care. But from great story structure, we build and we have to add on what we call pre-planned interaction. You're kind of choreographing the interaction because what I have learned from really over the years, and I've been an early adopter of virtual meetings, audiences do not naturally interact with each other. It is sort of feels like a foreign thing to do. You need some prompting, right? Especially when it's virtual and we're not together. So we've always believed in prescribing and planning the interaction at logical moments in your story. And we give an example of one. Actually, that sleep training story is the one that I think of in that mm-hmm. virtual, because we talk about here's the story and here's how we'd inject some interaction. I think it's key because we're all multitasking in virtual meetings, right? We're checking email, we're working in the background, and kind of it's this perfect storm for audience tune out. So if you think about what storytelling does, storytelling helps us break through. It helps us create trust and community and connection with our audience. And so in order to do it well in a virtual environment, you've got to take that storytelling element and then sort of a plus one to it, right? By building in that interaction and really choreographing it ahead of time and then being flexible enough to zig and zag. Because that's the other thing. I mean, any great story or any interaction you plan, be ready for plan B, right? Be ready to read the room, see what your audience needs in the moment. Maybe your time gets cut short. Maybe you're running, you're feeling the vibe and there's so much chatter in the chat panel. We don't need to pause for Q&A, even though you thought you were going to at that moment. So I think it's just being flexible and comfortable with your own narrative and then using the environment that you're in, whether it's a virtual meeting room, whether it's using something like Slido or Poll Everywhere to engage through an app or a, you know, a QR code. I think it's just knowing that the opportunity is there to interact and create a two-way dialogue, but it's not going to happen unless you plan for it.
That is awesome. Choreographed is a great word to use for presentation.
Right? And I'm not even a dancer, but how do you know the dance moves unless you study the choreography? Someone wrote it, someone built it, we practice it, but then we're nimble enough to flex in the moment.
To that point, let's go back to headlines. You mentioned it earlier, and you devoted an entire section to slide titles or headlines. I call them headlines.
Yeah.
And it's one of my peeves to see people using that valuable real estate on a slide, on any communication for a label.
Yes.
Rather than using an, I call them insightful headlines, but the concept of active headlines, making the title part of the story. Let's talk a little bit about how people struggle with making an active headline statement and how do they keep it short enough to not become part of the problem, right? Of too much title, too much text. Honestly.
Yeah. So this always resonates with folks when we deliver our workshops. And I know it's really resonating in our book. A lot of us are in a hurry, right? We're busy, we're cranking, we're building out decks. We're borrowing from each other a lot of the time, right? So we often create these Franken-decks, as I like to say, you know, it's this hodgepodge cobbled together set of slides that you might've given me two, and I borrowed this and I got three from marketing that look good. So it's a hodgepodge. The headlines are really, I think of it as the glue. It sticks everything together in your story. And a lot of us are in a hurry. And so we write headings. I'm looking actually at a deck right now I have open from, you know, a past life, but, you know, source of customers or our plan or update or, you know, the buyer
sales.
Process. It's just, so what it does, headings make your audience work hard. Headings make it challenging also for the storyteller, the person there that is presenting or communicating, to work hard too. Because now you got to take a minute and say, okay, wait, source of customers. What was I supposed to say here? Oh, yeah. The source, yeah, right. So it puts everybody's working hard when we write headings. That's the fact. Now, it seems like it saves time because they're short and sweet. But I think if we can move towards, as you say, these insightful headlines that are actionable, that are a little more contextual, a little more detailed, yes. But if you're not there to tell your story, your headlines do it for you. And from all the clients that we serve, the luxury of always being there to tell your own narrative is not reality. I mean, how many times does our boss say, just send me two slides, or you're not coming to that meeting, but I just need a couple of nuggets that I can present up the chain. Having those headlines anchor that person and support that handoff, you know, the storyteller you're handing off to is huge. And it just ensures that your audience isn't decoding the message, but you've defined it for them. So headlines are key. I always say, like, don't even worry about the visuals. Get your headline straight. Have that narrative flow. I will often write my headlines down or voice memo my headlines into my phone when I'm just trying to get it out of my, you know, my brain.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So the headlines are key. And we use an example in our training. It's like running a relay race, the baton, right? Did you guys ever do that in high school or, you know, like pass the baton summer camp? I don't know. Like, I wasn't a runner either, but this idea really resonates in that the connection, the headline connections between your signposts and your story have to connect, right? I have to go from setting and characters to conflict to then my big idea and resolution. And they all have to flow. They can't be sort of these siloed type of headings that don't connect. The headlines should tell the story even when you're not there.